that, because most of these tourists who come, they get a shock. It's known as the culture shock. We have learned from the tourists this year. And what is the shock? The shock is seeing dire poverty all around. And how can we supposed to be enjoying in this land, you see? How can we enjoy? How can we eat? We are shocked. We fall sick. And, well, our trip is spoiled. So what the government thought is, the best thing is to round up these beggars and let the appearances of the country be such that it is rosy, everything is fine. And it is so. It is. There's no doubt about it.
Fantastic difference in 10 years.
Just a minute. So what happened is that you won't believe this happened, that government started rounding up the beggars and rounding them up and creating camps to house them and creating work to give them employment so that they can have an in a common commune where food is cooked for them, doled out to them, and they earn their livelihood and they are given wages for their tobacco and for their little knickknacks and this and that, and food is supplied and all in the camps. These people who were rounded up forcibly by law, they started escaping like convicts, you know, from a prison. They escaped. And the reason for their escape, when there was a conference between the beggars and the government officials, well, you try to force us into camps, you see, and you tell us to stop begging, but we earn more in begging than what you pay. Why should we be there? You follow? That is the result. So now it's all lax. Is it still in force, moral? Or they are all loose? They are out of control. They can't be kept there because they earn more in begging than what the regular minimum wages are. You follow? That's how it is. So the first principle is that it's blessed to give than to receive. That's what Baba says. Give, give, but know how to give. Give in such a way that you forget. The giver forgets and the receiver should not remember also. The real gift is that gift which is given and received in oblivion. Yeah. Just as he says, I give in silence that which is worthy to be given. So there is a fine discourse on gift. Is it here? I don't know where it is. What is that? In gift, he would say that you bow down to the person, put his forehead on the feet of the person and says, please accept this gift of God and oblige him. Mm. And oblige him by accepting. Yeah. It's not a joke to give. One giver must know how to give it. So that's how it is. So what he said is that, of course, you know, people want to give to the beggars through sheer exasperation. Mm. People want to give to beggars because their feelings are aroused to give. When people give to beggars because they feel sick at the sight of the beggars. So now what to do? So to those who feel sick, you see, at the sight, to those who are through sheer exasperation, you give. Never mind, give. But give when? Suppose if you are at the bus stop, suppose if you are somewhere, you see, and they pester you like anything, even if you shut the windows, if you turn your head, they'll turn your head like this, and you see. They'll catch hold of you and, give me bakshis or something like that. So they want to do is just give, but give when? Just tell them. Very lovingly, politely, wait, I'll give you. No sooner. If you give one person, there will be like flies coming around. You see, hundreds of them will be there. How will you cope up with them? So the very thought of giving and getting out of this whole turmoil would be lost. The purpose is lost. So wait till such time when you are about to leave, give it and then go away. That's how it is. But then there is another thing is, be of hard-hearted. Be hard-hearted and don't bother about them. Remember one thing, because what happens even if you were to give, you then just laugh, you see, and then turn to your neighbor or a passenger, their co-passenger, and say, scoff at these people. Oh, these people are like flies, you see. They won't leave us. They're like leeches, you know. Oh, they should be slammed behind the bars and all that, what is the sense you're giving anything? It's just waste. Speak no word, think nothing about it, just allow them. Knowing fully well that the Creator who has created his creatures is exclusively responsible to see to the sustenance of his creation. If you have a firm faith, otherwise you become too presumptuous that without you they will starve to death. So what about the Creator who has created them? Who is the one who sustains the whole creation? You bypass him. No, but then you say that he gives you the feeling to give. That's how he sustains them, isn't it? Huh? Yeah. You didn't get the thought, I got the thought. So what happens is, give, because he's the one who gives. But then he says that also hear how I want you to give. That's how he wants you to give. Forget about it. Otherwise, you take upon yourself all their impressions. Suppose if I were the beggar to your door, and through feelings or exasperation, you just give me a 10 rupee note and says, please go. Please go. I say, oh, may the Lord bless you. May he fill your treasury, you see, with a millionfold of that which you have given. May your family, may your husband and children, may they thrive and may they prosper. And you feel so happy about it that I have at last helped. You feel really genuinely happy about it. And the Bhagavad says, that shouldn't be so. What happens is, you feel happy, and you not only feel happy, but then you try to share your happiness with others. Or within yourself you share it. It's so good that I was prompted to give. So good that I give. I give. Means you're belittling the Creator. Becoming so presumptuous that you are the one who are the cause of his sustenance. So that's where it's wrong. He prompts you to give, but he wants you to forget that you are given. Then what happens? If you don't forget, then what happens? You are given it. So if what this man does, because it's his vocation, he earns more than he can spend in his belly. That's a fact, mind you. Don't you listen to anybody, any other report. It's a fact, I know it. Because we have been on the streets begging also. We know it. We are beggars also. And we are still beggars. So they all know. So what happens is, now, this man, whom you are given 10 rupee note, instead of taking that note to his family, with this 10 rupee currency, he goes to the tavern, or he goes to the gambling den, and he either gambles actively, or he puts it there, say 5 rupees there, on a certain, you know, we have some gambling known as matka and cotton figures and all that, like you have race and all that, you put it on a number and then you get 104 needy. It's terrible, terrible task to find the needy. And there they won't accept any nonsense from us, that we have come to help. They say, who are you to help us? Our beloved Lord is mighty enough for our sustenance. We know their plight, but they are the real ones. We will never accept it. We have to cajole them, beg of them, receive, please, be oblige us by having. Do so. Eventually somebody's heart melts. Because of our pleading, it melts. Not because they are in need. Then they accept. So they are the ones who are really worthy to be given. Now, what else? Another question.
Give someone else a tip. Give someone else a tip.
Oh, I see. Nikki, you don't know. We have to solve this dilemma first. I don't know. That is how it is. It's a fact. कुमार जाते नहीं खाने के लिए तुम खाने के लिए नहीं जाते हाँ
नहीं
Mayor Baba on Real Gift Sitara, September 1955.
55, yes, sir. 1955.
29 years, Mr. Baba.
What is meant by real gift? If gift is to be real, then both the one who gives and the one who receives the gift must forget all about it completely. To forget completely would mean that the giver should not feel that he gave, and the receiver should not know that he received the gift. If the giver does not forget, then he feels that he has obliged the receiver. And if the receiver does not forget, then he knows that he has been obliged by the giver of the gift. Love alone comes as the real gift from God, because God bestows gift of love and man receives it, and both forget completely about it. Because of complete forgetfulness, man can never strive to love God, and God has always remained as the eternal beloved for mankind. How can God forget when he is omniscient? When I say that God forgets completely, I mean it so, because his gift of love is the real gift, and unless he forgets about it completely, the gift of love can never be the real gift. Is ever ignorant of all-pervading love of God, and he never realizes the gift of love, although he does not realize God.
But I am too. What is that? What is happening? This fire.
In the middle.
When I say that God forgets completely, I mean it so. Is that so?
No, then it goes, I am too. It looks like I am. I never know what the word is.
I mean it so. Because when I say that God forgets, man too is ever ignorant.
That's right.
Please read this again.
Okay.
How can I, from there,
How can I forget when he is omniscient? When I say that God forgets completely, I mean it so. Because his gift of love is the real gift. And unless he forgets about it completely, the gift of love can never be the real gift. Man, too, is ever ignorant of all-pervading love of God, and he never realizes the gift of love, although he does realize Godhood ultimately. When the omniscient bestows the real gift of love, he has to manifest his complete forgetfulness by becoming absolutely callous of his lovers. Hence, the untold sufferings on the path of love are experienced by the lovers of God, and also the unimaginable pangs of separation are experienced by those who are gifted by love divine for their beloved God. God becomes callous of his lovers because he is omniscient, and he knows the real meaning of real gift. Therefore, it is that God becomes callous, and the lover who receives the gift of love divine from God begins to love God so intensely that he completely forgets that he loves God and that the love was the gift from God. The lover experiences the bliss of divine love in the midst of fiery pangs of separation from the beloved God because he is completely oblivious of the gift from God. As long as the lover does not forget the gift of love, he is not at all happy, in spite of the eternal love of God on all alike.
Before?
Simple.
Yeah, simple. Would you follow? No.
It's not that simple.
The way that you say, what did you not follow? You see what happens, he does, he reads it, you see, as if he is reading it. The pieces in college. Yeah, this I follow. This is
the gift of love from God.
Yeah, this is gift of love from the God. Mm-hmm. Baba says, the real gift is giving when you don't oblige. The giver is neither obliged nor the receiver is obliged. So how can God forget when he is on? Then he comes to this. How does God forget when he is omniscient? Because he is the one who gives the real gift of love. Love alone comes as the real gift, Baba says, from God. Because God bestows gift of love and man receives it. And both forget completely about it. Because of complete forgetfulness, man can errors, right, to love God. So that, what he means is, when, how does man forget he has been given the gift of love? Because when he has been given the gift of love, there is some other mechanism that comes into play.
Mm.
When the lover feels that he does not love the beloved, the gift itself distorts that particular feeling, because gift is such that he wants to love the beloved all the more. So no sooner than that gift has been received, the lover feels that he is not loving. He wants to love more and more, and he longs for his love, he longs for his love. When will I love you? When will I love you? You see? So that means the receiver has completely forgotten that he has been given the gift already. That's why he wants to love now.
That in itself is love.
Yeah, but in itself is love. So now what happens is, but then that is man's side, Baba says. But how can God forget when he is omniscient? Baba asks that question. How can he forget when he is omniscient? So now there is another thing that comes into play. So what this is very beautiful. So what happens is, when the beloved has given the gift, and he really forgets, because he is the real giver, and the gift of love is the real gift. So what happens is that the lover experiences total callousness, indifference from the beloved. You follow? Yeah. The beloved has given the lover a gift of love, and he has forgotten that he has given the gift of love. That's why it becomes a real gift. So when he forgets that he, that means gift of love, means he imbues me with the qualities of lover of the beloved. And he forgets the lover. And he becomes indifferent, and he's careless of the lover. He doesn't care for him. That means he has forgotten that he has given the gift of love. Through that gift I am loving him. And in spite of my loving him, I feel that I don't love him enough. And because I don't love him enough, he is indifferent. But he has also forgotten that he remains indifferent and he remains callous. So it is like that.
It's in one of the books, I think.
Is it? It is this?
Not complete.
Yeah.
All right, now read this, and then we'll go off for our lunch. This is an answer to her, query. This is one of the letters that I have written to somebody who asked me the same question regarding what should we tell the people about the breaking of the silence. Has he broken the silence or not now that he has passed away from our midst? What is it?
This is
a letter to Pakistan. This
is October 14th, 1969.
Peter passed away in January, and they started asking, has he broken the silence? What should he tell the world? Did he do it?
Hmm. Erich writes this letter. My dear Adi, I have with me your very loving letter of September 23rd, 69, and a typed copy of a note from the publishers.
The publisher wrote in the paper, here is a man who did not know his mind, and he calls himself God, and he has passed away without breaking his silence. So he had sent me that note. This is what
I can quite understand your personal feelings and the conflict of mind on the issue of the breaking of the silence of beloved Baba. Please note one very simple fact, that whatever I may say, mentioned verbally or in writing on the subject of our beloved Baba, is my own personal viewpoint as from a layman, and it does not carry any stamp of authoritative statement. Personally, I feel very reticent to mention anything about beloved Baba. Understanding fails to fathom his ways and utterances, and I frankly admit that I do not know nor understand his ways and utterances, and on my own, I do not even try to do so. Beloved Baba has often told me that the moment one feels that one understands anything about God, one has surely misunderstood it. So best is to keep mum. When some close ones press me to answer their queries, I say out whatever I personally think or feel about them at the moment. Likewise, when you wrote me prior to September 23rd, I replied to yours. I replied as a person to person in Baba's love. My reply must not be misconstrued as expressing the views of the Mandali in general. So, dear brother, please do not take any of my statements in my personal letters as having any stamp of authority. I have to make clear to you also that whatever may have been mentioned in the Glow or elsewhere on the issue of the breaking of the silence of beloved Baba has nothing whatsoever to do with what I say on the subject. Not that I have to say anything on the subject. Therefore, please do wipe off any doubts created in your mind due to what I may have mentioned in my letter to you, and know once and for all that I do not know anything for certain on this issue or on anything pertaining to beloved Baba's utterances, and that each one is absolutely free to have his or her interpretation on beloved Baba's utterances. When you wrote to me asking me about beloved Baba's uttering the word and the breaking of his silence and his manifestation, I was reminded of the very first sentences in the text of the New Testament. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt amongst us and beheld his glory, glory as the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth. Accordingly, I expressed in my reply to you another angle on the issue, as I felt at the time of writing to you. I would like to express it once again more clearly in this letter as follows. The silence of Mayor Baba in his man form was the personification of the silence of God, and his being in our midst as the God-man is the Word made flesh. His having dropped the man form is the act of releasing the Word, that is, the Word that was encaged in man form got released when the body, when encaged in it, dropped, which simultaneously tantamounts to the act of breaking the silence. My dear Adi, please do not take this as a statement of facts. It is just one more morsel of food for thought. That is all and nothing more. So don't become so very serious about what you hear from me in reply to what you ask. I am not any master to give you any authoritative statement. As for your project of Baba Diary 1970, would it not be wise to drop the idea for the present? Nevertheless, it of course rests with you and Dolly to decide and go ahead with your plans in the cause of our beloved Baba. Best is to do whatever you are prompted to do from within. Kindly share this letter with dear brothers and sisters of Baba Group Karachi. What I mean is that you please send a copy of it to Mino and Adi Dubash only for their information. Much love to you, Dolly, and dear children from yours lovingly, Arish. So you have no authority. You, who are you?
And he does not dare, how dare we?
No question of not daring, but this is a fact, you see. We can't discuss, we can't argue, we can't express that we understand. Really speaking, I really don't understand. I don't know anything about it. But this is what we have gathered from you. At least, human intelligence is there, intellect is working, memory is still working. So, what harm is there in sharing? So this is how we share.
And this is
so clear, and to me it appears to be so very clear. I see it, you see, where it is mentioned, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, with God and was God, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt amongst us, and we beheld his glory. It's a fact, we have seen it. Glory as the only begotten from the Father. To us he appeared to be that. So, now I became convinced of his Godhood being God in human form because of his attributes. This is what my experience is. As I told you all, I didn't accept him because what he said, that he is God. But because he exercised infinite compassion, he exercised that love, he exercised his charity and all these things which are attributes of God. Oh, I said, then you must be God. You follow. These are my experiences, then, and they have been quoted, the first lines of the New Testament are there. They were said 2,000 years ago. Who may have said it, we don't know. They may have shared it also with the public. From what they heard, you see, what harm is in sharing? They got me from the past, full of grace and truth and so forth. It goes on. If you want to go further, go and read it. Go. Read it.
Can this be another reason for his silence? That these expressions from you and everybody among us who heard or reads about Baba and feels something, we say it through our ghost conscious human minds. If he said it in his words, in his understanding, in his language, we wouldn't understand it anyway. So maybe that's why the silence.
That's right. That is also another thing. So many interpretations. If he were to say the truth in his own language, we won't be able to understand it. If he says the truth in our language, then there are contradictions. There are endless arguments and debates on it. He says that he has observed his silence. He wants to break his silence. He will break his silence. And so many things. He's going to manifest. And the breaking of his silence is the sign of his manifestation. And people out of with your own ears, you will hear it. And all these things are there. So what does it all mean?
Ari was saying the other night, he said, someone asked about it, he said, that's why it is a spiritual life, because of the paradox.
No, but it is a fact. It has been said, so it's a fact, that infinity can never be proved without paradoxes. Only through paradoxes can infinity be proved as infinite. Infinity is nothing but composed of contradictions.
Includes everything.
Which includes everything.
And in the moment of wisdom, all paradoxes are resolved.
Yeah. There's nothing. No sooner you try to understand, then it's paradox. If you go beyond understanding and know it, everything stops in an instant.
Because Maya is paradox.
Yeah, it's all. Stop. That's where no amount. So his word of words will give meaning to all words. Otherwise there's no meaning to all these words. There's confusion.
That doesn't mean stop talking about it.
Of course it doesn't mean stop talking about it, but then it is considered wiser to stop talking.
Not necessarily better.
Yeah. It is. Sages have said that. Sabse bhali nachu. There is nothing better than silence. Nothing better than silence.
Things that are real.
Are given in silence. No, but those, the sages, he used to say, the one whom I was meeting in my childhood days, he said, Sabse bhali na chup. There is no other thing better than silence. He was known as Mukavaga, the silent one. But he used to speak with us. I said, but you have been named as the silent. He says, yes, I don't speak with animals. How can I speak with animals?
Who is this?
The one who used to visit our place when I was.
You're not talking about
Baba. No, Mukka Baba. There was one Mukka Baba.
Is this the one your father used to kick away from?
Yeah. Not kick away.
I mean, you know, not literally.
Your father would leave.
And then you said later on that Baba had told you that he was Jivanmukta.
The same.
I was there, it was the same.
Lunch.
So these are the things. We're not sure about silence.
How about the story that Krishna
made
to
ask
you?
Herself and Baba.
Jai Baba. I'll just try to tell you in a nutshell how, before I read this, how I came to Baba. I was a very small kid when I heard about Meher Baba. He was then known as Sadguru. I didn't care. Didn't want to know anything more about it. Then, years afterwards, my father fell very, very ill. He had developed gangrene and my uncle, doctor, said, the toe will be cut off. And in a few days, he said, no, the whole leg. So we were really worried, and he was shouting with pain. So we knew an Irani lady who was working at my uncle's place, not Dr. Uncle, another uncle who was the education director of education in Pune. So he was in Pune, but his family was in Karachi. Seeing our plight, she came to us and said, you know, there is one lady, Hilamai Irani. We call her Hilamasi. She knows somebody called Meher Baba. So I said, yes, I heard of his name. No, wait in here, listen. He is a great sadguru. He can give you anything you want. So I'll take you to Hilamai. So we three sisters, the eldest sister now is dead. So we went with her to Hilamasi's house. And seeing her, she said, you all are very lucky to come upstairs to my room. I sat down. Instead of asking who Meher Baba is, no, the first question was, if Meher Baba is what he says, he must cure my father. You see, from a material point of view, we were a very united, and we are still a very united family. Mummy, Daddy, and three sisters. And very much attached. If anything happened to one, the whole house would go mad. So, I said, no, Hilamasi, if he is what he says. So Hilamai, I think, had psychic eyes or what, he looked like this. Why do you want your father to know? What is his life worth? He's got a very nice place up there, wherever it was. And he has only a few days to live. So I said, the way he cries with gangrene is a very painful thing. This is only a few days more for you to hear his voice. Serve him. I said, sir, night and day we are serving him, but with no result. He says, can't be cured. Baba will take him away. But she gave us udi. You know what udi is from that?
Duni.
She gave us something else. She says, just little, put little duni here and just a few grains on his tongue. Now you see, my father was diabetic. So his eye operations, both eyes, failure. He hadn't seen Baba, and he couldn't see even Baba's photo. My mother, at least, did not see Baba when he was in physical body, but she could see, she saw his photo. And all of us sort of believed in Baba from the very moment. But we were all, you know, the mischief maker is here. So, is it so or is it not? Is it really true or is it not? Anyway, we used to put that in. Then, after some time, he was gradually sinking. Suddenly, at the he died at 8 o'clock in the morning. From 1 o'clock, he started, he couldn't talk, he couldn't speak. He just said, Baba Aya, Baba Aya. Baba means Baba. Aya means he has come. Now, we hadn't seen Baba, not even his photo. And we, like fools, didn't understand what he was talking, Baba Aya, Baba Aya. Suddenly, my cousin, he stepped into the room and said, who is this man standing behind my uncle's bed, at the head of my uncle's bed? I said, what are you saying? Nothing. We couldn't say anything, but he saw. He said, a man in a long white robe. He's standing just at the head of Masaji's bed, Masaji's uncle. You see, maternal uncle. So what are you talking about? We couldn't see. And at the same time, Daddy kept on saying, Baba Aya, Baba Aya, Baba Aya. That means Baba has come. But we didn't understand his language at that time. Then, at about 8 o'clock in the morning, he died peacefully. Before that, he used to cry and cry and cry. When he dropped his, when he died, not a tear. There was complete calm in the room. That was the incident. Years afterwards, I realized what my daddy was trying to tell us. Then, as we grew older, we got more sense regarding Baba. Then, a few years later, my mother became very ill. And we were not told at that time that at the time of death, the person must utter Baba's name. We didn't know that. We were all worried about mother, who was pretty old, but still, mother is a mother. We wanted her to live. That's all. We didn't care how old. If anybody said, well, your mother is really old, she's not old. Please don't call her old. So then, she of course loved Baba. And even, she was very, very ill once. I'll tell you that later. So when she breathed her last, just before that, our neighbors were there, Mr. Rajputwala and his wife. Some of you know Mrs. Rajputwala Banjoji and his wife. And just before she, well, died, she didn't speak also, she said this, looking straight at you. That's Baba, 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 Baba. We didn't notice that till Mrs. Rajputwala says, look what she's saying. So what is she saying? Baba, 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 Baba. Then she died very peacefully. See? So I think we must have had some connection with Baba. Some connection. Sometimes I laughingly say that we must have been in Arabia at that time when Muhammad was there. Therefore we are in Pakistan. Anyway, so that was that. But when my mother was very, very ill, a few years before she died, whether she had psychic eyes or God knows what, exactly at 6 o'clock in the evening, her eyes would be riveted on the clock on the wall, and she would say, it is 6 o'clock. Lots of people in Gandhi Garden. She said Gandhi Garden because Gandhi Garden was in Karachi at that time. Now I think it's called Government Garden. Look at these people. And then she would say, Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi, shot dead. That was on the 13th of April 1947. He was shot dead in October, I think. 47. Gandhi.
January
48 it must be. But this started when Dolly Rajputwala was getting married to that Arjani boy. See? And the neighbors were really worried, what if she passes off and here there's wedding next door, and they were really worried. So, and for days together, 6 o'clock, Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi, shot dead. Look at the number of people, the crowds, the crowds. I thought that she had become mental. So we sent a telegram to Baba. I said, this is every day, it is the same thing. What is she talking about? And Baba sent us the telegram. Much love to Bachubai. That's my mother. She recovered and forgot everything about Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi, and we never mentioned that again to her. Unfortunately, one day when she was well enough to come to the dining table, there was a big, that was genuine, big photo of Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi lying on the table. It was a newspaper. She looked at it and like a child, she grabbed at it. Says, Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi is dead. I'm still alive. What connection she took with that, immediately she removed the paper, because we were worried that again it is 6 o'clock and it will start. But it didn't start. Just removed. We didn't tell Baba this because Baba's instructions were that nobody should tell me anything and nobody should write to me anything. That's all. So she must have seen it.
Yeah, but you sent the telegram to Baba. That means you were already loving Baba.
Yes.
How do you come to that point?
That is what point?
How did you, from your skepticism about who Baba is, came to accept him for who he is?
Yes. The incident with my father. My father's incident. That too came later on.
Achha.
Then mother saying, Baba, Baba, why? Then this and Baba, we sent Baba the telegram to say that mother had become mental. We didn't know what she was talking about, you see. Baba sent us a telegram to say that everything will be all right, serve your mummy well. That's all. Much love.
But you were Baba lovers when you sent that?
Yes.
Soon after our father's death.
Soon after
your father's death.
Yes?
What year did your father die?
I don't remember. Years back. When we were kids. Then, that was this. And, what is that? suggest? Then my sister, of course, then we were Babalas. But we couldn't come here at all. See, Meera did ask me that if you were Babalas, how is it that you just come? But you see, we had one trouble after another, long sicknesses in the family, for months together and for my mother in years together. So much so that her body had become dehydrated when she died. There was no peace at all, mental peace in the house. Then, just lately, my elder sister died of cancer. That we were told, Baba had dropped his body in 1969, my sister died in 1972. The whole time, Baba, 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 Baba. But there was no pain. Only once she cried. And the doctors operated on her. They found that it had all spread all over. Nothing could be done. They stitched her up. That's all. Only once she cried. And then she says, "Oh, Meera, can't you tell Baba also about it?" And Adi Dubash was there. So he said, "Now, no one but Baba. Bas." And the whole time she was saying, "Baba, Baba, Baba." She died very peacefully. And
what year did you see Baba?
65, fifth year. All three of us.
Saw Baba in 1965.
65. And Jir had come in 1962
to East West Gathering.
East West Gathering. Only two. Because after my mother died, my uncle started. Bronchitis. Every 6 months he used to be in the hospital. He was a bachelor uncle. Didn't stay with us, but just next door. So we had so we had to look after him. Every 6 months, take him to the hospital. Bronchitis. So when my sister died, before my sister died, seen Baba in 65, and then 62 we only sent her because we couldn't come. We had to be with uncle to look after him. Then 65, all of us came. Then 69, after Baba had dropped his body, we all three were here. And Joe was ill again with bronchitis. And we said, "We'll take you in ambulance." So Joe came, she was all right, and this one developed diarrhea. Because she was sitting, lying down on a sofa in Guru Prasad, after bowing down to Baba's chair. So both of them gave me a hell of a time. I was really crazy. I said, "You're in Baba's land also, you are whiny." Anyway, so when Joe died, she died very peacefully. And we were crying the whole time. And people used to get angry with us. "Don't cry and go, wash your face and then go to your sister's bed." And we used to go to her with a smile on her face, all put on. And so many people, hearing that she was thinking, they came to see her. And what do you think? "Joe, do you know me?" "Oh yes, Jai Baba." Those who are non-believers, all my cousins, the fools, "Jai Baba." Another one, "Joe, do you really know?" "Oh yes, you're toxic, Jai Baba." "Jai Baba." I said, "Yes, she welcomes you." That's all. Then, when she actually died, of course the lights were all on. Suddenly the light became brighter. Sometimes it happens in enlightened bodies. And she just kept gazing as if she was looking at somebody, and there was a smile on her face. Complete calm. We didn't cry at all. We couldn't cry. And there was no fear, nothing. Calmness reigned supreme in the room. And there was a smile on the face. That smile remained even when she was laid, on the stone. And Kaushik Patel, that Karin, that fat Karin's voice, "Oh, but she's smiling." I said, "Yes." Distinct smile on her face. Then, on the second day, just before the night ceremony began, Minu Karaske says, "I'm telling you, in Baba's name, this is what I saw." I said, "Illusion." "No, listen." As she was put into the well where all the bodies are kept.
Tower of silence.
So little Mirji, who was here, he was only a little kid. He was, perhaps 7 years old. So he said, "Daddy, what are you looking at?" And Milo is just like that. So what are you looking at? Then he said that we saw from that tall silence a ray of light going right up there. Your journal has gone to Baba. I said, Milo, was it a fact or you just imagined? He says, no, he actually rubbed his eyes, went a little further. Ali and all were there.